Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, December 14th, 2023. After filing deadline, three candidates will face Tony Gonzalez in Republican primary. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. District 23. The filing deadline for congressional candidates closed on Monday evening, setting an official slate of three challengers in the Republican primary race against incumbent Tony Gonzalez. Former ICE Special Agent Victor Avila, popular gun influencer Brandon Herrera, and Medina County Republican County Chair Julie Clark will face off against Gonzalez over the next few months for a shot at a seat in the House. Gonzalez has been the subject of controversy within his own party throughout his two-year term. Back in March, an overwhelming majority of the state Republican Executive Committee voted to censure the representative, citing his votes in favor of gun control and gay marriage. The congressman also drew ire from his own party by opposing H.R. 29, an immigration bill brought by 21st District Representative Chip Roy that would have essentially suspended the asylum-seeking process at the border. In a tweet posted in March, Gonzalez referred to the bill as anti-immigrant and unchristian. On Tuesday afternoon, a report from the Texas Tribune described this year's Republican race in District 23 as the closest thing to a competitive primary involving a congressional incumbent. Two of the three candidates sat down with the Big Bend Sentinel to talk policy and why they'd like to represent District 23, which includes the majority of the Trans-Pecos region from San Antonio to El Paso. Candidate Julie Clark did not respond to a request for an interview. Victor Avila. Born and raised in El Paso, Avila has lived most of his life in District 23 and has extensive experience along the border. Before retirement, he served various roles within the Department of Homeland Security, dealing with immigration issues and cartel violence. In 2011, Avila was on special assignment in Mexico, en route from Laredo to Mexico City, when he and another agent were nosed off the road by members of the Zeta cartel. Fellow agent Jaime Zabata was killed in the ensuing altercation. Avila sustained three gunshot wounds, but survived. Avila said that the life-or-death experience has informed the bullish way he approaches negotiations and the way he promises to advocate for his district if elected. "I lost my fear that day," he said. He felt he was in lockstep with many other Texas Republicans in his disappointment that Gonzalez vehemently opposed H.R. 29. "I reviewed H.R. 29, and I thought it was incredible," he said. With his own votes, Gonzalez has proven that he's not a Republican. That's for sure. In June of 2022, just weeks after the Uvalde shooting, Gonzalez voted for a gun control bill called the Safer Communities Act that would have expanded the boyfriend loophole, restricting those charged with domestic violence from purchasing firearms. The bill also incentivized red flag laws that restrict people more generally deemed dangerous from purchasing guns and implemented a waiting period for background checks for first-time buyers under the age of 21. Notably, John Cornyn, a Republican representing Texas in the Senate, sponsored the bill in his own chamber. Avila is a lifelong member of the NRA and felt that Gonzalez's stance on firearms was weak. "I'm a defender, protector, and user of firearms, being in law enforcement all my life," he said. "Having a gun on my hip to me is second nature." Addressing issues specific to the Big Bend, Avila said he was familiar with the area, especially Presidio and Alpine, through his work with the Department of Homeland Security. He recently visited Terlingua as a part of his 2024 campaign and asked the crowd what kind of change they'd like to see beyond the border discourse Tri-County residents are often looped into. Healthcare was a big issue for many, and Avila said that he would like to have a doctor on his staff to advise specifically on improving access to care for constituents. He would also like to see programs that incentivize medical students and doctors early in their careers to serve remote communities. "I will try to bring as much funding for that as I can from the federal side," he said. Brandon Herrera. Herrera is an outspoken Second Amendment influencer who also owns the AK Guy Incorporated, a company that manufactures Kalashnikov rifles. The company was made famous in part by Herrera's invention of the AK-50, which shoots 50 caliber, half-inch in diameter machine gun rounds. The gun is not available for sale and is revered as a kind of mythical creature in trigger-happy online circles, but was once listed for $7,000 and is pretty damn big, per the company's website. Herrera has a wide reach among young conservatives, with over 3 million followers on YouTube and 300,000 on Twitter. He identifies as very politically incorrect, and his campaign slogan is "Let's Go Brandon," a reference to a right-wing meme with its origins in a reporter mishearing a crowd chanting the phrase F-blank-blank-K, Joe Biden. On Tuesday, the candidate visited Fort Davis on a tour of the district, including Eagle Pass, El Paso, and Fort Stockton. He acknowledged that San Antonio is where he stands to win or lose the most votes, but hoped that he could get the rest of the vast District 23 on board. "I think it's important to talk to the other communities, especially the border communities who haven't felt heard and feel like they're being forgotten about on a national scale," he said. Herrera came away from his visit to Eagle Pass on Monday with a sense that the federal government was getting in the way of enforcing its own immigration policies. "The thing that I hear most often from immigration authorities is, look, man, we're all here. We have the equipment. We have the resources. We're just not allowed to do the job that we're hired to do." When pressed about some of the obstacles that Herrera feels federal law enforcement faces, he said that he had heard horror stories about policies that essentially required officials to send migrants back without prosecution. "There's instances I've heard of where you'll have migrants come up to the razor wire trying to get through, and then Border Patrol is ordered to then go and cut the razor wire so they can get through," he recounted. "That's very intentional." Both Gonzalez's votes on gun control and immigration spurred Herrera, who had never considered going into public service and considers the word politician a slur, to use his brand for much more than cracking jokes and showing off his marksmanship. "Life has been very good to me. My business has done very well, and I've got a huge platform to be able to launch this off of," he said. "I'm in a position where I think I can do this, and if I didn't do it, I think that would bother me." The office of Tony Gonzalez did not respond to a request for comment for this story. Staff photo by Mary Cantrell. Attendees of the Marfa Invitational 2023 Art Fair Browse gallerists' booths at St. George Hall. The entity has recently lost its nonprofit status and come under fire for allegedly misusing donated funds. Marfa Invitational founders deny donation mismanagement allegations as further details emerge. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa, founders of the Marfa Invitational Art Fair, husband and wife duo Michael Phelan and Melissa Bent, are denying recent allegations from a former board advisor that Phelan misused donated funds for personal expenses. We are confident that our top-tier team of legal and financial attorneys, advisors, and consultants can prove that all legal and financial records for Marfa Invitational are in order, in compliance, and up to date, Phelan and Bent wrote in a joint statement sent to the Big Ben Sentinel by their legal counsel, attorney Liz Rogers. The pushback comes after reporting by the Big Ben Sentinel revealed that previous board advisor Kathleen Irvin Laughlin filed a charitable trust complaint with the Texas Attorney General's office in October, claiming $150,000 she donated for a foundation building was improperly spent on Phelan's personal and nonprofit travel, car payment, and other personal expenses. Marfa Invitational lost its 501c3 nonprofit status on May 15th of this year due to a failure to file tax returns with the Internal Revenue Service for 3 consecutive years. In her complaint, Laughlin states that she was not made aware of the potential loss of nonprofit status until after her donations were made. Founded in 2019, Marfa Invitational is a boutique art fair that attracts international galleries, art world A-listers, and other cultural phenomena to town the first weekend of May. In February 2021, Phelan told the New York Times he planned to establish an interdisciplinary year-round arts and cultural foundation on 5 acres in Marfa, land owned by Matthew Kruger that the Invitational has utilized in recent years as an informal sculpture park. While the land currently sits devoid of any buildings, mock-ups on Marfa Invitational's website envision a home for the foundation, consisting of 6 separate buildings featuring metal roofs and glass garage doors, as well as an outdoor pavilion. According to public records obtained by the Big Ben Sentinel, an investigator with the Consumer Protection Division at the Attorney General's office requested additional documentation from Laughlin in early November following the filing of the charitable trust complaint. The AG's office did not respond to requests for comment on whether it was launching a full-on investigation into the matter, and Phelan and Bent did not respond to a request for comment on whether or not the AG's office had contacted them regarding the complaint. In response to the investigator's request, Laughlin provided the AG's office with copies of the nonprofit's bank statements from March 2021 to May 2023, a spreadsheet detailing the business 2023 credit card transactions, and a cease and desist letter dated October 31st, ordering Phelan to remove social media photos and mentions of both Laughlin and former board member Alex Skull in connection with the Marfa Invitational. The letter states that Phelan's personal expenses as well as certain other expenses were not disclosed to the board, and Laughlin and Skull do not want their names and reputations used to raise money for an organization that they now believe is not a legitimate nonprofit, but instead a vehicle for Phelan's personal use. Phelan has maintained that Skull was never formally voted onto, therefore never served on, the Marfa Invitational Board. However, the cease and desist letter states that Skull was briefly on the board in an informal capacity, and Skull is listed as a board director in an April 2023 promotional email sent by Phelan to the Big Ben Sentinel. Laughlin told the Big Ben Sentinel that a formal gift acknowledgement of her $125,000 donation for the foundation building was never provided by Phelan. In a May 2023 email obtained by the Big Ben Sentinel from Laughlin, Phelan wrote to her and Skull that he met with a builder and received price estimates, bringing the total to $125,000 for a singular structure. In an email response later that day, Laughlin said she would make the donation from her donor-advised fund that afternoon. According to Laughlin, she donated an initial $25,000 for the planning and development of the Marfa Invitational Foundation site in 2022 and gave an additional $125,000 in 2023, specifically for a foundation building. A portion of the funds earmarked for the building were given in May, the month Marfa Invitational lost its 501c3 status, she said. Phelan has since returned $25,000 to Laughlin. In a text exchange provided to the Big Ben Sentinel by Phelan's legal counsel, Laughlin wrote to Phelan she will consider the rest a full write-off, but does not want any future acknowledgement. Rogers said Marfa Invitational plans to move forward with the building project. The nonprofit's 2023 credit card transactions and bank statements obtained from the AG's office shed further light on allegations Laughlin outlined in her charitable trust complaint. There are routine charges to airlines, hotels, services like SiriusXM and Amazon Prime Video, as well as monthly $585 payments to Mercedes-Benz Financial Services. In May, the month Laughlin donated $100,000 to the Marfa Invitational, Phelan paid off around $81,000 of the nonprofit's credit card debt, according to bank statements. While Phelan and Bent did not respond to requests for comment on how car payments, travel, subscriptions, and more were deemed as nonprofit rather than personal expenses, they did state that any and all expenditures in question were in fact charged against Michael Phelan's $50,000 loan to Marfa Invitational. According to the nonprofit's bank statements, Phelan had transferred $50,000 from his personal bank account to the nonprofit bank account in March 2021. That same month, however, there was a $39,900 debit to the account. Phelan and Bent did not respond to requests for comment regarding what the $39,900 check was for. Information about the check was not available on obtained bank statements. Bank statements also reveal that Phelan was regularly paying himself around $600 out of the nonprofit account and occasionally writing checks to himself for various amounts. There is also a limited liability company under the same name as the Marfa Invitational that appears in the bank statements. Marfa Invitational's bylaws, which were adopted in 2020, and attached to Laughlin's original charitable trust complaint, emphasize proper checks and balances like board approval of expenditures and reimbursements, documentation of decision-making processes regarding compensation for services, and more. Phelan and Bent declined to comment on whether a current board approval process was in place for expenditures, and to provide copies of board meeting minutes containing authorization of the expenses Laughlin is disputing. In a statement to the Big Ben Sentinel, Laughlin wrote that between the months of January and August 2023, Both her and Skull spent their own time and resources to support proper nonprofit rules of governance within the organization and help Phelan build upon his vision. In a May 2023 email from Phelan to the pair provided by Laughlin, Phelan wrote a new certified public accountant for Marfa Invitational was needed and requested their help with recruitment. Per Laughlin's statement, she and Skull requested financial records from Phelan but did not receive them until an in-person meeting with him in September, where they learned of the nonprofit status loss. At this point, we believe Michael shared the nonprofit bank and credit card statements with us because he needed our help to regain 501c3 status, Laughlin continued. She and Skull worked on filing for nonprofit reinstatement, she wrote, which is when they discovered that 50% of $125,000 donated by Laughlin in 2023 for the construction of the first structure on the 5-acre campus was spent on a variety of unexplained expenses, none of which could be tied to the building or construction. They also determined at that time the remaining balance in the nonprofit's account did not contain enough funds for the building to be completed, she said. Laughlin and Skull confronted Phelan with their findings on October 11th, at which point he denied any challenges to construction of the building or issues with the expenses, despite the references we pulled and pointed to from the charity's bank statements, she writes in her statement. They then let fellow board members know about the situation, and some chose to step down with them. Laughlin said she is still in support of the concept of Marfa Invitational and believes the event economically benefits the town, but she was compelled to speak out about the misuse of funds out of concern for the art, artists, and other patrons involved with the organization. I still support Michael's vision for the Marfa Invitational Art Fair LLC, but I did not want supporters to naively donate money to the Invitational's charitable arm without further scrutiny of questionable expenses, Laughlin states. An application for Marfa Invitational's nonprofit status reinstatement, Form 1023, was submitted to the IRS in late September, according to documents Laughlin turned over to the AG's office. In her charitable trust complaint, Laughlin wrote that she wishes the Marfa Invitational does not regain nonprofit status out of concern that financial mismanagement will happen again without supervision of the current director. According to the IRS, the process for reinstatement can take up to 180 days. Marfa Invitational recently retroactively filed its 2022 tax returns, according to Phelan and Bent's legal counsel. The IRS does not require organizations that made less than $50,000 to backfile 990N returns. Phelan claims that policy applies to Marfa Invitational for years 2020 and 2021. In a joint statement, Phelan and Bent said they are continuing to nurture and support artists from around the globe and remain committed to their vision of uniting through the transformative power of art. We are deeply grateful to the community of artists and visionaries who have helped to realize the singular vision and mission that is Marfa Invitational, they wrote in a joint statement to the Big Ben Sentinel. Phelan and Bent declined to provide comment on dates for the May 2024 edition of the Marfa Invitational, which have yet to be announced, or on the status of Sleeping Figure, a monumental sculpture by Matt Johnson, gifted to the Invitational, that awaits installation on the Sculpture Park's grounds. Laughlin wrote in a statement that both she and Skull are concerned the sculptures on site will not be properly maintained by the nonprofit entity.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, December 14th, 2023. City disannexes property, amends ordinance for recreational off-highway vehicles. The City of Fort Stockton has been working since late summer on changing the zoning for a 0.7-acre piece of property in the Orient Park addition and annexing the property into the city limits at the request of then-property owners Elena Flores and Jose Gilberto Flores as part of the property purchase agreement, an action which the city completed October 10th after a series of public hearings. Turns out, the new property owner did not want to be annexed into the city. Current property owner Fabiola Gonzalez-Ortiz petitioned the city to remove the property from the city limits at Monday's city council meeting. There was a miscommunication between the owner and the new owner when there was a sale going on, and there is no desire to be annexed into the city, said City Attorney Hucha Boinpali, who added that the city can disannex if there's no benefit to the city, according to the Home Rule Charter. The property still receives city services, but at an outside city limits rate. The city appointed A.J. Franco to be representative on the Pecos County Appraisal District's Board of Directors, a post previously held by Ruben Falcon. The council unanimously approved the appointment, with Darren Hodges abstaining. The council approved a resolution and ordinance changing the city's general election pursuant to Senate Bill 2258, changing the city's election date from the May uniform date established by law to the November uniform date established by law, and providing for the holdover of the mayor and city council members to conform to the November uniform election date, adopted length of terms for the mayor and city council members, and established the election procedures for future general elections. The city approved Ordinance 23-141, Recreational Off-Highway Vehicles. This is to address golf carts operating on city streets. This will actually be called Article 8, Golf Carts. Specifically, this is talking about golf carts. Sand rails are not allowed on city streets, and the golf carts must be operated by individuals aged 21 and older and can only be driven from a half hour before sunrise to a half hour after sunset and cannot be operated in an alley or sidewalk unless entering a park. Boinpali also designated that golf carts can only cross Dickinson Boulevard from north to south or vice versa at either Colpitt Street or Nelson Street and cannot operate on Dickinson Boulevard. Golf cart operators must apply to the city and pay $150 first-time fee and pay $75 per year after that. They must have proof of financial responsibility and insurance. The police department will also inspect the golf cart. I spoke to Chief of Police Ernesto, and we agreed that those are kind of lesser congested and kind of on the side of the city. All the rules of the road will apply while they're on the roadway right there. And that's just to get across from north and south. The chief also added that hand signals are legal for the operator of any motor vehicle in Texas. This gives the citizens, the police, time to get used to seeing these vehicles on the streets. Mayor Casillas said that if golf carts are going to operate on city streets, they must adhere to the ordinance. While the ordinance currently only allows golf carts, Councilman R.J. Bernal asked about operators of side-by-sides. What's the difference between a side-by-side that has seat belts, headlights, tail lights, and if you don't have your seat belt on those, it will not go over 15 miles per hour? He asked, what's the difference in having one of those on the streets and a golf cart when those guys are driving around, abiding the rules, staying under the 20 mile per hour, just cruising around, crossing where they're supposed to, so now they're the ones that are going to be punished for obeying the laws, obeying the rules. Councilman Paul Chavez, who introduced the item to be considered, said they're not punishing anyone, just taking baby steps to eventually allow other such vehicles on city streets. Bernal said that there's not going to be a lot of golf carts, so we're just pretty much eliminating any off-road vehicles on the streets. For now, Chavez said, until we run the course and just take steps instead of having to rescind everything, it's my intention to do this every few months. Look at it. I would hate to add everything and then start taking it away. Buonpolli said the ordinance will help the police department regulate. The item was unanimously approved. County enters into lease agreement with Fort Stockton Chamber for rodeo. The five-year run of the Comanche Springs Rodeo has been a successful one for the Chamber of Commerce and all of Pecos County. The Chamber and County hope to continue that trend and mutually agreed to a five-year lease agreement on Monday to continue the rodeo every fourth weekend in March at the Civic Center and the County Coliseum. Economic Development Director Ramey Ramos said the rodeo has earned several state awards and most recently was recognized at the State Fair of Texas as the most improved rodeo. Ramos said they were trying to secure the production company and needed to secure the dates for the rodeo, which required the lease agreement. From setup to the performances to teardown takes about a week. The county will charge a nominal fee for use of the facility. We have to have some compensation for use of the facility, said Frank Lacey. We're very appreciative of all the local businesses and all the local support we've got, and that's what we foresee doing with that money when that money is to put it back into our community, whether it be direct improvements to the building or to our students through scholarships. The court terminated its tax abatement agreement with St. Gall Energy Storage at the company's request. The court approved a bid from Concho Aviation provided aerial hunting game management through USDA Wildlife Services at a cost of $360 per flight hour. The Sterling City-based aviation company has been providing the service, and the new agreement continues the service for the next 2 years. The commissioners approved a bid from McCampbell Irrigation of Laguna Vista, Texas, for a pump system at Desert Pines Golf Course in Fort Stockton. The irrigation system was approved in November. The court heard a presentation from Dr. Benton with Texas Tech University Health Science Center on a joint effort with Pecos County Memorial Hospital to provide a telehealth medical care clinic in Cananosa once a month. The court set the dates for the commission meetings in 2024 as well as all county holidays. They approved the purchase of Motorola radios for the Sheriff's Department using Operation Lone Star grant funds, and they approved a request from Pecos County Water Control and Improvement District 1 to cut 4115 North Stone Road in Precinct 4 for a water tap. Local election filings. The deadline to file for the March 5, 2024 Republican and Democratic Party primary election is December 11th. The following are candidates who have filed for the March 5th Democratic and Republican primary election. Pecos County Commissioner, Precinct 1, Tom Chapman, Democrat incumbent, Fred Ingersoll, Republican, Francisco Ramirez, Republican, Andy Rivera, Republican, Mario Juarez, Democrat, Ross Casillas, Democrat. Precinct 3, Nikki Perry, Republican incumbent, Pecos County Sheriff, Thomas Perkins, Republican incumbent, Timothy Murphy, Republican. Pecos County Constable, Precinct 1, Salvatore Rangel, Democrat. Precinct 3, Jesse Malone, Republican incumbent. Precinct 6, Donald Jackson, Republican incumbent. City Attorney, Frank Lacey, Republican incumbent. 83rd District Attorney, Ori White, Republican incumbent. Pecos County Tax Assessor, Collector, Veronica Bernal, Republican. The Sol Ross State University Department of Nursing is now accepting applications for the summer of 2024 cohort for a Bachelor of Science degree program. To qualify, students must have been admitted to Sol Ross State, successfully complete the TEAS exam with a cumulative score of 75 or higher, and meet the national mean in individual areas. English 64, Reading 70, Math 69, Science 54. Successfully complete all core courses and prerequisites by the end of spring 2024. have a cumulative GPA of 2.5, and have a B average in all science courses. The application cycle will remain open until January 31st. Interviews will be held February 1st, and applicants will be notified of admission status on March 1st. The application can be found online at www.solrossedu.com/WP-content/uploads. Completed applications should be emailed to amanda.loza@solross.edu. For more information, call 837-8337. Two pedestrians were struck and killed within a week. Twice in the span of 5 days, pedestrians were struck by a motor vehicle on U.S. Highway 285, resulting in the death of two individuals. On December 2nd, Aiden Alvarez of Fort Stockton was struck by a semi at Gonzales Loop while riding his bicycle. Alvarez was airlifted from Pecos County Hospital to University Medical Center in El Paso and passed away due to his injuries on December 3rd. According to Fort Stockton Police Department, Alvarez was struck by a northbound Freightliner semi with trailer driven by Lionel Racinos. The report states that Alvarez failed to yield the right-of-way to the semi. No charges were filed against the driver. In another pedestrian versus motor vehicle accident, a San Antonio man was struck and killed on December 7th. DPS stated that William O'Connell was struck by a 2017 Ford 250 driven by Joshua Robert Pass of Fort Stockton. Pass was driving southbound on 285 at mile marker 421, and O'Connell was in the roadway when he was struck by the Ford. O'Connell died at the scene, and Pass was unhurt. O'Connell had been arrested earlier that day by Fort Stockton police for possession of marijuana. The arrest took place December 7th. O'Connell posted a $500 bond and was released. DPS reported that the accident is still under investigation and was investigated on scene by Trooper Stephanie Fennell of the DPS. There's a story behind the Little Pink House. Alamo Tire and Auto Repair is now located on the west side of Dickinson, but used to be located at the Alamo Ranchette, south of town. The company was initially started as a hobby by Dr. Saceda to keep his nephew productively engaged, but demand for their services grew to the point that they needed more staff and eventually much more room. According to Beto, his nephew is like the little brother he never wanted, he said with a chuckle. At Alamo Ranchette, customer transactions, bookkeeping, and inventory control were conducted on two computers inside a little pink house that still stands on skids. To honor the company's humble roots, the new location service department includes that same exterior pink color. The new location has over 10,000 square feet of covered shop, which has allowed for growth. While Beto has a great crew, he has no new plans to hire more employees, but he would like to make his current employees as happy and productive as possible. Expansion plans include improving service by entering the towing arena with a recently purchased tow truck to better serve the community. He also plans to expand his tire inventory from 9 racks to 27 in the near future, simply to keep up with demand. We're a full-service mechanic shop that wants to be a tire shop because we can get tires that other local tire shops cannot. The shop maintains 6 car lifts and 14 work bays that stay occupied around the clock, and they have the only brake lathe in the town, except for one other major local retailer. They also provide welding services, exhaust work, and auto air conditioning and heating services, in addition to general car and truck mechanic services from bumper to bumper. Fort Stockton Rotary Club made a donation of $2,500 and 30 gift bags to Dale Briscoe of Angel Flight to purchase airplane fuel and to provide blankets for patients he will carry to medical centers at no charge to the patient. The $2,500 came from $1,500 the club raised, plus a grant of $1,000 from the Rotary District Office. Angel Flight is a nonprofit charitable organization that arranges free air transportation for any legitimate charitable medically related need. Their service is available to individuals and to healthcare organizations. Angel Flight arranges transportation for people who are financially distressed or who are in a time-critical, non-emergency situation due to their medical condition. As a flight volunteer, Dale accepts all of the costs as associated with his aircraft and the transport of his ill passengers. In Fort Stockton, it can be a lifesaver for residents needing chemo treatment or a doctor's visit in Houston, Dallas, or other major cities far from Pecos County. Besides the donation of fuel, the Rotary Club also provides gift bags for the patient and passengers that included a blanket and other items. The Fort Stockton Rotary is constantly on the lookout for organizations that need our help, said Melissa Trevino, and we're proud to make this much-needed donation to Angel Flight and its local pilot, Dale Briscoe. For more information, contact Melissa at 290-2204.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, December 7th. Grand Falls Royalty High School sophomore killed Sunday in hunting accident. The story was written by Sam Karras of the Big Bend Sentinel. On Sunday morning, December 3rd, the Presidio County Sheriff's Office responded to a call for emergency assistance from a well-known hunting area along Highway 67 between Presidio and Shafter after a 15-year-old male shot himself in the chest while preparing rifles for the day's activities. Peyton Pacina, a student at Grand Falls Royalty ISD, 20 miles south of Monahans, was on his family's annual hunting trip to Presidio County when the accident occurred. With an escort from the Sheriff's Department, family members loaded Pacina into a private vehicle and drove toward the hospital. Marfa EMS met the family on their way to Alpine, where Pacina was pronounced dead on arrival at the Big Bend Regional Medical Center. The Grand Falls Royalty ISD posted a tribute on their Facebook page in response to Pacina's tragic death. Quote, "His warmth, kindness, and bright spirit touched the lives of many in our community," they wrote. Around 500 accidental gun deaths occur in the United States every year, the majority in males between the ages of 10 to 29. Hunting accidents account for around 14% of these deaths. Presidio County Sheriff's Office Deputy Joel Nunez said that his department had responded to accidental firearm accidents before, but this one had been particularly difficult for him to deal with. Quote, "It was a tragic and heartbreaking accident," he said. Nunez stressed proper firearm safety and training as a means of prevention. Quote, "Tragedies can happen in an instant, and it is important to teach our children how to handle weapons safely if they will be using them," he said. "The responsibility of holding a loaded weapon is immense and should not be taken lightly," end quote. Pecos shooting info request, no reply from police or city. The story was written by Smokey Briggs. Last Friday, the Pecos Enterprise filed a public information request with the Pecos Police Department requesting the basic information about the incident that led to Pecos police officers shooting and killing Adam Ibarra of 1825 West Jackson Street. So far, there has been no response from either the police department nor the city. The request addressed to Chief of Police Lisa Tarango stated in part, quote, "The Pecos Enterprise hereby requests a copy of the incident report or a similarly named paperwork as kept by your department as defined by Houston Chronicle Publishing Company versus the City of Houston regarding the November 26, 2023 incident at 1825 West Jackson Street that led to the shooting and death of Adam Ibarra," end quote. While both the police department and a Department of Public Safety spokesman denied that the information was public, Austin attorney Bill Alshire disagreed. Aleshire is an attorney in Austin who focuses his law practice on government transparency and accountability, and who serves as a hotline attorney with the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas, of which the Enterprise and the Monahans News are members. The hotline is a service provided by the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas to newspapers and the public to help answer questions regarding public information. DPS Public Information Officer Stephen Blanco said that the requirements of the Houston Chronicle case did not apply since the police had not arrested anyone. Aleshire replied, quote, "Look, it was an incident whether or not someone was arrested. The incident report, the basic information about what occurred, who was involved, should be made available to the public. The law requires it. The rules do not change because someone was shot and killed instead of arrested," Aleshire said. In a press release last week, Tarango said that the investigation of the shooting had been turned over to the Texas Rangers. Lopez brings basketball pedigree to Lobo program. The story was written by Armando Flores. There is a new face courtside this season for the Monahans Lobos basketball team. Raul Lopez takes over the Lobo Cager program and brings with him a vast knowledge of the sport from many years of playing at both the high school and collegiate levels and learning from one of the best in the business. Lopez, an El Paso native, was hired by the Monahans Wicked Paiute Independent School District during June of this year and entrusted the reins of the program. He succeeds Brad Reese, who took the head basketball coaching spot at Midland High. The new incumbent is a native West Texan. Lopez was born and raised in El Paso, the third of four children born to Roberto and Estella Lopez. Quote, "It was humble beginnings," Lopez said, as he was reminiscing about his upbringing. "I was raised in a home with one income. My dad was always very supportive of us being in Little League sports, baseball, football, basketball." Lopez took a liking to all three sports as he began attending Bel Air High School in El Paso. He played all three sports as a freshman, then whittled it down to football and basketball, and then decided to focus on basketball his junior and senior years. The gamble paid off for Lopez. His talents were notable enough to garner the attention of Azusa Pacific University in California, an NCAA Division II school. After graduating from Bel Air High School in 1988, he received a basketball scholarship to attend the university. Quote, "I was really fortunate to play for a guy who recruited me out of El Paso by the name of Terry Layton," Lopez said. "He had a lot of connections overseas and stuff, and I ended up there. My last year, we got a coach named Bill Odell. He ended up being, in the 1990s, California's all-time winningest coach, and you had a lot of good coaches at the time at UCLA and USC. He was a really good coach," end quote. Lopez arrived on campus at Azusa Pacific for his freshman season at a time when the university was experiencing notoriety with recently drafted Christian Okoye, also known as the Nigerian Nightmare of the Kansas City Chiefs, still training at the school during the off-season, along with the Santa Monica Track Club, which included the likes of multi-Olympic gold medalist Carl Lewis and decathlete Dan Johnson. He graduated with a bachelor's degree in social science. Quote, "After graduating in 1992, I had a stint playing basketball for a year in Mexico. Following that year, I came back. I taught at Isleta High School for 1 year and coached freshman and JV boys basketball," Lopez said. A 180-degree turn was in the works for Lopez following his 1 year at Isleta. Lopez left teaching and coaching to go to work for the railroad. Quote, I was a locomotive engineer for the Southern Pacific for 10 years, he said. The last 3 years, I was really just at home. I got on staff at Mottwood High School with legendary coach Tony Harper. I was on his staff for 10 years. We won a lot of games and a lot of district championships at the varsity level. Harper is the winningest active high school basketball coach in Texas. His 1,120 career wins entering this season rank him fifth in the country amongst current active coaches in the country. Harper played basketball at what was then Texas Western for the Bear, Don Haskins, and was a member of Haskins' 1966 national championship team. While at Mottwood under Harper, Lopez was a part of many of those victories and absorbed the tutelage from his 10 years under Harper, all of which has proven handy in his career. Lopez said, I was a part of some freshman championships and JV championships. At the varsity level, we got to the Elite Eight on a 30-1 season. For a span of 4 or 5 years, the team that knocked us out ended up winning the state championship. In 2012, Lopez became the head basketball coach at El Dorado High School in El Paso, where he took over a program in disarray. They went 15-15 that first season and progressed to some 20-win seasons. He stepped down in spring of this year and took the job here in Monahans. Aside from his collegiate coaches and Harper, Lopez cited his JV and his old varsity coach, Bob Hack, as influence. Hack coached at Bel Air and Hanks High Schools and Cisco Junior College, and eventually won a state title at Santa Teresa High School in New Mexico. In fact, it was his continued relationship with his junior varsity coach which led him to Mottwood as an assistant under Harper. Quote, my old JV high school at Bel Air was an assistant principal at Mottwood at the time, so I went over there and happened to speak to Ralph Reyna. I told him I was interested in getting back into coaching, and that's how he referred me to Coach Harper, he said. Lopez added, I've been really blessed with some good coaches. I've been really fortunate to be around some great coaches. Coach Harper was on the 1966 championship team, so a lot of the foundation and principles I have go back to Don Haskins and Coach Iba. That's where this whole thing originated from. It's evolved a little bit, and I've added my own flavor on it. A lot of the stuff we do, fundamentals and stuff derived from Coach Harper, Coach Iba, and the Bear. His love of all sports is evident. You may have seen him roaming the sidelines of home football games this season. Quote, I really like football, Lopez said. I was really good at it, but I loved basketball more. As a kid, I would take my basketball everywhere. As I got older, I realized basketball has taken me places because of the time I put in and the work ethic. So it's taken me places. End quote. The love for athletics runs deep in the Lopez family. Lopez has a daughter, Crystal, who works for Lifetime Fitness in the Metroplex area, and his son, Jacob, is a Division II basketball coach at Sol Ross State University in Alpine. The passion even extends to his nephew, Ruben, who is the head basketball coach at Dalhart. Lopez's son played for Lopez at El Dorado High School, then went to play collegiately at Texas Wesleyan, where they won the national championship at the NAIA level. He later transferred to Sol Ross, where he continued playing basketball. With his arrival in Monahans, Lopez has been working hard on instilling the fundamentals of the game, along with the footwork needed to defend well. Quote, footwork is the foundation for any sport you do, he said. I don't care what sport it is, you need to have good footwork. Also, teaching the kids life lessons that go long beyond being on the basketball court, like being accountable, being constantly on time, acting the right way, getting it done in the classroom, because if you don't get it done in the classroom, it's not going to help us. If you can't do those little things, how can you help us on the court?" End quote. Lopez cited one of the biggest adjustments he had to make is the enrollment numbers. At one time, while at El Dorado High School, the enrollment numbers were 3,100 students and playing at the 6A level. After a new school broke ground, enrollment dropped to 2,100. His passion and excitement for the game is evident, and Lopez is excited to be in Lobo Land. Quote, "I really have enjoyed my time here with the kids," he said. "I really enjoyed getting to know them and really trying to teach them the way I think basketball should be played. I know this area presses a lot, and they run and gun. I'm just trying to get the kids to understand the game and play the right way, which I think is right." Thousands attend two-day Christmas events. The Christmas season kicked off in Monahans on Friday evening with the Monahans Chamber of Commerce's new event, Christmas in the Dunes, which replaced the chili market normally held at this time of the year. The annual lighted Christmas parade began at Hill Park at 6 p.m., traveled north to Sealy, east to Parkway, and south to the Ward County Event Center, where an estimated 2,000 people came to enjoy the tree lighting, costume contest, hot chocolate, ice skating, Santa sleigh rides, and more throughout the evening. The events continued on Saturday, beginning at 11 a.m. at the Event Center, with 88 vendor booths from all over the area, Lubbock, Pecos, Fort Stockton, Midland, Odessa, Kermit, and Wink. Vendors were displaying a large variety of merchandise, crafts in the form of clothing, hair accessories, jewelry, glassware, home decor items, and home canned jellies, jams, candies, peppers, salsa, hot sauce, and more were displayed for sale. Santa Claus was present throughout the afternoon to take pictures with the kids. Stage shows, which included magician Monty Holder and little twirler teams, entertained visitors with their performances, as well as offering a place to sit and rest for a while during the day. The aroma of chili and cornbread filled the building for those who were hungry. An art show and a nativity walkthrough room was also available for the enjoyment of the visitors. Children's activities included cookie decorating, making Christmas ornaments, face painting, a balloon artist, and hayrides with the Grinch. Party jumpers, ice skating, hot chocolate, s'mores, and food trucks were also included throughout the day and evening. An estimated 1,000 visitors came through the event center's doors to take part in and enjoy the long list of activities on Saturday. Visitors watched performances, shopped, visited with friends, and ate good food during the two-day schedule of events, which concluded at 11 p.m. Saturday evening. The lighted Christmas parade, sponsored by Arch Rock, listed the top three winning floats as first place going to Lori's Kids, second to Transformative Leadership Academy, and third to Flippin' Out West Texas, with the Best Lit Award going to Arch Rock. The Ward County Crime Stoppers sponsored the Christmas Costume Contest, resulting in the following winners. First place went to Devaney Spinks, dressed as a caroler. Second place winner was Kyler Spinks as Charles Dickens.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.